The following Bass Talk Live iTunes podcast is brought to you by Lowrance. BTL, coming at you. Bass Cat Boats, Strike King Lures, AFCO, and Duckett Fishing. Welcome once again to BTL Bass Talk Live, where we're going to talk bass fishing and anything else that we want to talk about. You are looking at a live shot from Matthew, who is live at Lake Gunnersville. And Matthew, a lot of stuff going on this week at Gunnersville for us. We've got the one-on-one live with Swindle versus Jordan Lee. And got a little media event going on. But man, one day after the festivities are over, quite the classic in Knoxville.
It was, Jeffries. Is that the cat sitting in my normal BTL chair straight across from
me? Yes, she's chilling.
I feel like I've been replaced by Izzy, the long-haired cat, Mark.
No, that's all good, man. She's mellowed out. She's been out here. I've been out here in the studio for a while. She's been sitting there. She misses you, Matt. That's what it is.
Sure she does. Speaking about someone who probably isn't too mellow right now, yeah, Odd Defoe came in as your odds on and probably everyone else's odds on favorite to win the 49th Classic that was on the Tennessee River, Teleco Fort Loudoun, and came in and pretty much won it exactly how we all thought it was going to be won, Mark.
Yeah, and Hooky the Bookie, I think Hooky the Bookie would have made a lot of money this year because I think very few people would have put money on the favorite, and I think because of the way that I had the odds set up, there would have been a lot of people throwing some cash down trying to make a lot of money on these long shots. But wow, first time in history, the guy gets it done in the hometown that he was born in and lived for the majority of his life. Good grief, man. You know, after day two, and I kind of thought that things are pretty quiet for the HFA. Things are pretty quiet for Ott. And then he went out on Sunday and just smashed him.
Yeah, you know, you had Wesley Strader who had a kind of a lighter day one, and he came on day two. Ott, who had the heavy day one and went lighter on day two. And then Brandon Lester, who made the cut but was just a little too far back. You know, he had one of the biggest bags of the final day, but just wasn't able to make it happen. But all three guys who are extremely familiar with that fishery were in the top 10 at some point or finished inside the top 10 in this tournament. And I was talking to a couple other people immediately after it was over, and I said, you know, the wild thing about this tournament, Mark, is going into it, we said the favorite is Odd Defoe, a chatterbait, a spinnerbait, and a flat-sided crankbait are going to play. It's most likely going to be one with a mixture of largemouth and smallmouth, probably somewhere between the 45 and 55-pound range, and most likely be one in Fort Loudoun. And, boy, it all happened.
It did. It did. And, man, a jam-packed expo, a jam-packed arena. And first time that they weighed in at a college campus, and they were lined up an hour before the gates opened up to get inside. And I think it was a great week, man. Everybody knew what was going on. Everybody knew some of the situations that were taking place just from the weirdness that we talked about for a number of weeks leading up to the Classic. But all in all, I think Bass did a great job. I think everybody did a great job. And I think I really blew the over-under on the number of people that cried.
I told you, Mark, these are some sensitive, in-tune, emotional anglers here. I wanted to set the over-under on number of anglers who shed a tear. I wouldn't say crying. I'd say shed a tear at 8 before our over-under show right before the Classic. And you said, oh, no, that's way too high. That's almost 20% of the field. We're gonna set it at 4. And I think after, like, 8 guys weighed in on day 2, we had blown the over-under on the 4. So definitely an emotional moment as some of these guys went across the stage for – what will be the last time of their careers and looked up. You know, they had the the upper deck actually was kind of curtained off on the first day, and then they opened it up the second and third day, and I went to the very top. You know, we're shooting some video for this classic that'll be out in the next couple of months, and I went to the very top with the GoPro and the camera thinking, I'll get a cool perspective of everyone in the crowd. And about 5 minutes before the weigh-in started there, I realized, heck, there's people all the way up here too. So really cool to see the passionate Tennessee fans. And, you know, they've had Bass Fest there on Chickamauga, and the Elite Series went there last year. FLW Tour has visited a couple times. But as a whole, Tennessee doesn't get as much love as some of the other states who are big into bass fishing. So when they get the opportunity, the Tennessee fans showed out big time.
They did. They did. I got so much enjoyment out of meeting a lot of the fans from BTL. There was an enormous amount of people there. I know a fan from South Carolina, Joel Crawford, actually had a poster or some kind of illustration done by Steve, who does a lot of work for Bassmaster from a visual art standpoint. And that was really cool, man. I can't thank the people for coming up to us and acknowledging what we're trying to do here. But the week was definitely about the fact that a lot of these guys did get emotional. A lot of these guys had decent performances in what was going to be probably their last classic, man.
Yeah, and it goes so quick. I was in the elevator with one of the anglers who competed in the classic, and it was kind of the morning after. I think I've talked about this a little bit on the show, but, you know, leading into the especially this classic, but every classic, you know, a lot of these guys knew that they'd been in it since the Angler of the Year Championship in October. So that gives you about 6 months to prepare for it. And I know a lot of these guys try to do, you know, something every day to get ready for the classic, and they work, and no one ever thinks about the day after the classic mark. It's always leading up to it and the anticipation and getting ready and doing it. And I was in the elevator with one of these guys, and it's just that kind of blank look. Okay, well, now what? Because they don't think about the day after. But I feel like in this classic, there were a number of anglers who were on stage who were thinking about the day after while they were on stage, realizing that this that kind of atmosphere or environment in the foreseeable future, they won't be able to walk across that classic stage anymore. And yeah. Bass took advantage of that. I mean, you saw in their promotional materials and with what they did with Zaldane, with what they had some of their Super Six guys say, with the video of the history of the BASS organization, going back to Ray Scott, bringing back how a number of these anglers got in, you know, the starting to dream piece that they did before it started. The Bass took full advantage of that in their video and in their pre-final weigh-in production.
Yeah, definitely. The video that they showed for the Super Six, I mean, it kind of brought a tear to my eye, man. They did a great job with that. And so many memories, so many people that have really built this event, the 49th version of it, into what it is. And we'll see what happens, man. I think it's over. I think now we're finally going to get past this. We're going to move on. I think both Major League Fishing and Bass definitely has their identity. There's not going to be a whole lot of crossover. Yeah, we have guys fishing the opens, but I think we are at that crossroad to where now, you know, people can focus on the task at hand and focus on the remainder of the year, and we'll see how things shake out. I know I'll be the first to admit there were some of the Elite Series guys that were there that I ran into that first time I ever talked to them. Had no idea, never met him, didn't know a whole lot about him. Find out, you know, that they're pretty good. And I think we're going to see how good they are the remainder of the season. As for the MLF guys, big news coming down. They announced stop number 7. They're going to Grand Lake in a prime time at Grand Lake. And what's going to be interesting about that is you and I both know, Matthew, a ton of boat traffic that time of the year on Grand Lake.
Well, there's a ton of boat traffic on Grand Lake now from about the beginning of March all the way through October. I mean, there's a series of tournaments. I think you've got a Big Bass Bash. You've got the MLF there. There's a Nichols. You got a Costa event that's going on. You got an Open a little bit later on. But, I mean, those fish are I got to be getting used to it. Or they all just live in Wolf Creek now.
Maybe.
But I want to go back to something. Did you say that you got a little misty eye? You shed a tear during the opening. Are you admitting that you have feelings other than anger?
Yes. Yeah, it really did.
Anger and bitterness, I thought, was what dominated your emotional sphere, Mark.
No, it really did, because there's a lot of memories there, and, you know, it was kind of all tied in. You know, I just spent, and I'm going to show people this. I don't know if they could see it because they got me on the low shot, but I just spent the previous day 45 minutes with Bob Cobb, and so many people in today's element of professional fishing, I just don't think realize the impact that Bob Cobb had on this game from all aspects. And
report editing,
yeah,
the Bassmaster TV show, recruiting members for Bass, working with Ray Scott to develop what BASS looked like.
Yeah.
All aspects. He just wasn't good at one of them. He did all of them for 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Even I think maybe even a little bit longer from that. Oklahoma native, started out, he was a reporter in Tulsa, and became Ray Scott's right-hand guy. And I'm only in chapter one. I read a little bit, kind of got to just about all of chapter one, and it is just amazing. And I think in this day and age of the YouTube angler, I hope they realize that if it wasn't for Bob Cobb, a lot of this stuff wouldn't be happening. And he's just such an influence from a journalistic perspective, from a production perspective. Check this out, Matt. He told me the very first classic that they did a show for, they did it with three cameras. Three cameras. They have three. Wow. They have three cameras right now covering one shot.
Yeah.
So yeah. That was an absolute joy to spend 45 minutes. He's in his 80s. He's in pretty decent health.
Yeah, he wrote you like a chapter long note on the inside cover of the book.
I know, man. I got kind of teary eyed when I read it when I got back to the hotel. But you know, it is what it is, and I think it was an enormous successful event for Bass. And decisions now. You know, we can speculate. We can talk. Obviously, with Ott being an MLF guy, it's going to be interesting what Bass does. Are they going to give him an invite back? Are they going to put in the Luke Clausen rule, of which, you know, when Luke won the Classic in Florida, he made the decision that he was going to fish FLW. He did not get a chance to defend his title. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with everything that has changed in the industry, whether or not Bass is going to extend an invitation to Ott to come back and defend his title.
And it'll also be able to see, you know, there's usually a pretty hectic schedule following the Classic champion, depending on, you know, where he goes for what interviews and what photo shoots. And, you know, typically on the cover of Bassmaster, I would assume he would probably still earn that spot. That's kind of a tradition that they've had, is that the Classic champ is on the cover of Bassmaster. But I would like to talk to Ott maybe a month, 2 months down the road, and see just how busy he is with the Classic, post-Classic coverage, and then kind of compare that maybe to what Jordan Lee went through the last 2 years, and see if there's a downturn, or maybe there's even an uptick in interest or interviews because of everything that's happening and with the way that he is a local. So I can't even get away from here. Look where I am right here, Mark. And Izzy has company now.
Holy crap, man. This is turning into a cat fest here. Jeez.
Yeah, CTF, Cat Talk Live.
Unbelievable. All right. You're right there on the shores of Lake Gunnersville. And,
yeah, I'm glad that was a friendly cat. That could have turned into something viral really quick.
a number of people on the instant feedback, they want to know where they can get Bob's book. And just do a search online. The name of the book is The Bass Story Unplugged. And it's a hardback. It's got like 400 pages in it. It's got an enormous amount of pictures. So I'm not sure. I didn't ask him whether or not it was available on Amazon or anything like that. But it's called The Bass Story Unplugged. If you just Google that up, I'm sure that will direct you to where you can get a copy of it.
I got it, Mark. Before we wrap that up, this classic, I think, had to set the record for the amount of money that Angler spent in tackle preparing for it, because I have never seen, out of 52 guys in it, so many guys who spent money on hard-to-find flat-side balsa baits and then spent this much money getting them painted in red crawfish and orange crawfish colors. That's, I think, just about probably three-quarters of the field was either fishing with a chatterbait or a custom-painted flat-side crankbait, Mark.
Wow. Yeah, there was a ton of that going on. And then the chatterbait, and we don't know what kind, bladed jig that Ott used to really put the clamp down on the hardware there on day three when he caught that fish kind of paralleling that boat dock. And how much influence did Keith Poche have on his decision on the final day?
Yeah, it's just like a weird part of this story.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you have Ott talking about Keith Poche, and you're like, well, here's Ott. He's a runaway favorite. You would think if his fish didn't fire on day two, that he'd have 15 other options on day three and goes on a tip completely legal, you know, that he got before the weigh-in was over from a fellow competitor, and decides to run something random just based on what a dude from Alabama and originally from Louisiana tells him to do on the final day of the Classic, the biggest day of his career. He goes a dozen, catches a 4-pounder.
I know, man. Kind of weird. A number of people on the instant feedback wanted to know what was the vibe with Ike. And obviously Sunday night at his party, the vibe was pretty good.
Yeah, he was super – I feel like he was disappointed that things didn't work out, primarily on that first day when those fish under the bridge on that kind of natural rock vein that he was fishing a DT6 and another kind of little custom Rapala crankbait didn't fire. But I feel like he thought he did all that he could. He maximized his effort, and you look at how well he finished, you know, a top six finish for Ike in another Classic, keeping that streak of every other year having a top 10 alive. But I feel like he really maximized his fish, considering they didn't go for him on day one, and those smallmouth that he was keying on the kind of clay gravel bars offshore, he thought he had between 22 and 25 pounds of those things in practice, and they never fired either. So he really had one spot that fired for two mornings, and none of his other stuff worked. He turned it into a shot at the one in the Classic.
I agree. What about some of the other guys? Any surprises from who made it to the Super Six? Obviously, Zaldane had a great week, had that great day with over 20 pounds. One of the things that kind of surprised me was on day two, where Jacob Wheeler had all smallmouth.
Yeah, that was kind of a cool deal that, you know, that he figured out there in the current. It had to be an 18-inch smallmouth, which you know, is anywhere from like 2.11 to like 3.4. It really kind of went off without any big surprises, Mark. There really weren't any big surprises in this Classic that I could think of. And I was thinking about it, there usually is, but I mean, yeah, Lester on the top six stage, Wesley Strader just off, Ott Defoe wins. You had past Classic champion up there. You had Jacob Wheeler going in on the final day. He's never finished outside of the top 15 in any major event that he's fished with BASS or FLW, and throw MLF into that too now. It was just really solid. I was highly impressed with Mark Daniels Jr. and what he was able to put together in this Classic, obviously building on the momentum of his BASS Elite Series win last year on Lake Oahe. He's really coming on as an angler to watch this year on the Bass Pro Tour. So I thought that was cool. It was, like I said at the beginning of the show, pretty much what we expected to happen, but the way that it happened was in such a cool fashion. And then to see Ott, you know, with what his little girl said afterwards, he's the best daddy in the world. it was a cool Classic.
Yeah, and we're going to dive more into it once we get through this week. We just wanted to come on today and really kind of let everybody know, hey, we get it. Here's some of our quick thoughts on what went down last week in Knoxville. And then we will continue to discuss what has taken place over the past five, 6 days in the state of Tennessee. One thing I want to mention, Matt, there were a number of opportunities that some things could have been said and they were not said. And I think everybody involved in last week pretty much showed a lot of class. There was a lot of class, a lot of respect. I think a lot of people, when they drove into that arena the very first day, and there was a ton of people in there on day one. Usually that seems to be the lowest day. But you could tell there were some people that really kind of respected the fact that this is what they had their career based upon for so many years. But at the same time, they still showed, hey, it's time to move on.
Yeah, 100%. I thought Bass did a great job on their side, really promoting the BASS brand without, I guess, bashing any of the anglers who decided not to be a part of that brand after this classic. I thought the anglers did a great job of knowing they were moving on, but still expressing their appreciation for what Bass has done to them, and I'd be very interested in getting, you know, a truth serum in some of these guys as they roll in on that day two and day three with the music going and the 20,000 fans around there to see it seemed like it kind of hit some of them that would be the last time they would do that. And we have no idea what, the MLF World Championship or the Red Crest is going to look like in the coming years. I guess you can only go back to the 60s and those first classics on Mead and stuff to see. I mean, I'm guessing there probably wasn't 10,000 people at Lake Mead for the first classic.
Yeah.
So you're going to be building the brain, but there were also probably a lot fewer people who knew the guys fishing in that Lake Mead classic than there were that'll be fishing in the Red Crest this year. So, but yeah, I mean, they ain't going to be holding fish up, that's for sure. It's good to see that roar and how pumped those guys got. I mean, when Justin Lucas pulled those fish out of the live well when he was in contention on day one, that's an element that they will not have in their arsenal from this point forward.
Good point, man. I want to go back bait-wise. We talk a lot about how much influence the industry has on the results based upon the winning bait. There were multiple baits that Ott used, but pretty standard stuff. There wasn't anything out there that I don't think people that fish during this time of the year wouldn't go into their tackle box or reach into their compartment in their boat and not pull out one of the items that was used to win this thing.
That's 99% true. I'm not sure the 6-inch mag draft was really a go-to bait for anybody that Zaldane blasted 21 pounds on, especially after you'd seen that watercolor. Now it cleared up a little bit the second day, but he had that combination of wind and current that made that bite viable. Obviously, he's a West Coast guy, has a ton of confidence in a swim bait, but that was the only thing that I saw that was maybe a little bit off the radar was that 6-inch mag draft in that white bone color that got him to the final day with the 21-12 bag on day two. Custom painted crankbaits, a lot of reds, square bills, 1.5s, chatterbaits in the shad. You know, gizzard shad played a big part of this. A lot of the guys talked about they would see that 4 to 6 inch kind of gizzard shad in the area dying or schools of them. So, some shad colored baits, the spinner bait played a little bit in the chatterbait, but did nothing really off the wall. I think Wesley Strader had a day with the TR, the turd or the Ned rig, one of the kind of do nothing worms, where he actually kind of went to some of the stuff in fish history and caught some fish doing that. He had some guys who caught fish on a jig. But for the most part, East Tennessee stuff, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. I want to let everybody know kind of the remainder of the week. Tomorrow, we've been pumping up, yes, our first one-on-one live. It's going to be Gerald Swindle versus Jordan Lee on a specific area on Lake Gunnersville. And that thing's going to crank up at 9 a.m. Central Time tomorrow. And then Thursday, I got to get some stuff done. Dude, we had massive winds here when we were gone. And it knocked out the power multiple times. And honestly, it was duct tape and crazy glue to get the show going today. Spent enormous amount of time before we went on to try and at least get it to this point. So the remainder of the week, I'm going to try and do a call-in show on Thursday because I know you're going to be traveling on Thursday, and then we'll have the remainder of next week, try and get some shows on. I want to try and get Brian Latimer on. We're going to have some guest host people come in, a couple of surprises for the fans and the viewers in the upcoming 2 weeks. And then some people might be wondering, you know, we didn't do the typical coverage that we did for so many years at the Bassmaster Classic this year. We're going to be working. We have a ton of video to go through. We're going to be working on our next 20 feet deep documentary that basically tells the story of so many things that go on at this event and the iconic meaning of the Bassmaster Classic. We're going to be working on that over the next month and a half, and hopefully we'll launch that here very, very soon. So that kind of lays things out. Matt, you and Dave did a great job this week. I can't wait to get the footage and get started on that documentary because so many things, so many storylines, so many just great stories about what the Bassmaster Classic means to so many of those guys, and it may be their last one.
I will say this. On the final day of the Bassmaster Classic, while Edwin Evers weighed his fish in, I was 6 inches away from him.
Wow.
While he was weighing his fish in. On stage at the Bassmaster Classic.
Not necessarily on stage, but yes, you were. You were. And folks, that will be an interesting part of the documentary. Can't wait to get started on that. Yeah, wow, that's kind of crazy. All right, Matthew, a lot of stuff going on over the next couple of days. I know you need to get out of here, get back to what you were doing there. But I just, once again, I want to say thanks for everybody that came up to us during the week. We have a tremendous group of fans out there that like to hear us yell at each other and talk about what's going on in this game. But a great, great week. And I just want to reiterate the job that Bass did last week, fabulous job, and the job that the anglers did. Great, great job. And it was just, it was an enjoyable week of which I think there's going to be a lot of memories there. Obviously a huge memory for Ott. And we'll continue going down this road, Matthew. So any final thoughts?
No, I don't think it that the anglers really appreciated, that was what kind of came out to me, really appreciated what they have built with Bass. Bass did a great job of showing their appreciation while continuing to take every opportunity in front of the biggest crowd that's ever watched a classic to grow their brand and promote their anglers moving forward. And we'll continue to talk about this next week as the Elite Series gets ready for Lake Hartwell, and the FLW Tour gets ready for Grand Lake, and the Bass Pro Tour gets ready to head to three unknown fisheries in North Carolina. And like Kevin Van Dam said before the final morning of this classic, he said this will be an iconic classic, will probably go down in history as one of the, if not the most memorable classic in the 49 years. So it's kind of cool to be able to witness it in person with you and Dave there, and just really interested in seeing how the next month plays out. You take this thing in chunks, you know, new tours are announced, and you take it in a chunk of the month. The season starts, you take it in a chunk of the first month. Now we're in the chunk of the first month where there really truly is separation between all three of the professional entities in the sport today as we know it.
All right, man, have fun today. Tomorrow, Swindle versus Lee, 9 a.m. Central Time. You have to go to BassZone.com to watch it. It's not going to be on YouTube yet. Yes, we'll put the replay on YouTube, but we're going to be streaming live directly to BassZone.com. Go there, check it out. Matthew, great job last week. Have fun today, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, there you have it, folks. Everybody be safe. We're out of here.